Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite podcast, where editors of Managed Healthcare Executive chat with healthcare executives in the C-Suite and professionals. Our conversations are about the most important issues facing American healthcare today, such as its cost, effectiveness, delivery, organization, and its fairness. Listen in, learn a lot.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Peter Werwine, and I am senior editor of Managed Healthcare Executive. I don't like to emphasize the senior part. And today I have the pleasure of speaking to Doug Chayet, who's on our editorial advisory board. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Peter.
And Lynn Barr, who is founder of Caravan Health, and Lynn is speaking to us from Lake Tahoe, California. So good afternoon to both of you.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me today.
So Lynn, could you, for those of us who aren't familiar with Caravan, maybe you could just give us your sort of elevator speech for what Caravan is, how long it's been around, and what it does.
Sure. So in 2014, I was a CIO in a rural hospital, and we couldn't participate in any of the programs, the value-based programs, because we were too small and we were paid differently. And so I felt that was a real threat to us. And so I started getting other rural providers together in the country and saying, hey, let's, you know, because none of us had 5,000 lives, right? And so I ended up pulling 9 hospitals together across the country and started a first national ACO. That was safety net oriented. And today we support a couple hundred rural and safety net health systems. That's our space, FQHCs, DISH, you know, the underserved. And we put them into ACOs, and we've got about 500,000 Medicare beneficiaries that we're managing across the country. We put them in great big ACOs and everybody gets paid. So we pool their lives and we hold everybody accountable and we move everything forward towards better patient care. And they say in our most recent performance year, 100% of the people participating in our models will get shared savings.
So how many different ACOs are under the Caravan umbrella?
Yeah, well, we used to have 38 of them. Right. And now we've shrunk them to 6. And so you see a lot in the press about there's fewer and fewer ACOs. Everyone's getting out of the program, but there's people like us that are just consolidating. And what was interesting is we started this consolidation in 2018. I published in Health Affairs about this, the problem with small ACOs. And now Evolent and Aledade also have national collaborative ACO. So I think we started something that nobody saw coming, but makes a lot of sense. Every payer knows you need a lot of lives.
And do these ACOs that you sort of group together, do they have any sort of geographic coherence, or is it just sort of here, there, and everywhere, and they're aligned along different lines?
So we treat every community, and you know, typically in our world, so we're oriented towards safety net hospitals. So every community is typically a hospital and their surrounding providers. And that could be, you know, 5 doctors, right? I mean, you know, in a small town. But we treat everyone like their own ACO. We give them their own data package, just like they were in the program all by themselves. But everybody has to do the same work. Everyone has to do wellness, prevention, chronic care management, coding, you know, the basics. And then we work with each community to identify their unique needs and solve their unique problems within their own community.
And are the ACOs under the Caravan umbrella, are they all participants in the Medicare Shared Savings Program, the main CMS program?
Yes, they are all in the Medicare Shared Savings Program. We also have some commercial arrangements as well.
So we've had a change in administration, and you know, I think that the prior administration was seen as being a little tough on ACOs and wanting particularly to push both upside and downside risk. The argument being from the prior administration is that's the way we're really going to get to value-based care and true savings. So I don't know whether you agree with my characterization of the prior administration.
I do.
But do you see any sort of shift going on in the early months of the Biden administration?
Well, you notice they've pulled back on a lot of the innovation models that were coming out. So we see that as a positive, to be honest. You know, the Medicare Shared Savings Program works really well. It's reliable. It's done under rulemaking. It's all good. Having lots of different models that sort of cherry pick different patients can be really destabilizing. And so I think the Biden administration is pulling back a little bit on all of those new models and going, okay, how does this really make sense, you know, in the totality? Because one of the risks that you have, like in some of these models that I want to carve out these high risk patients and I'll go give them to private equity companies, right? I'll call that a strategy, right? And I went to a meeting at the Innovation Center and there was like Trinity and us, and we were representing hospitals and everybody else was private equity. In the room, right? And they were there to talk about direct contracting, right? The problem is that, you know, as the providers, we're there forever, right? I mean, so you can come in and you can cherry pick our patients and make it really hard for us to make money on any of these programs. But then when the profit's gone, they're out of here, right? And we're still here in our community trying to serve our patients, you know? So I think that there's been some, you know, some really brilliant analysis of this by Trevor, at Aledade, who has really been coming out and saying, you know, if you want to try a bunch of stuff, you have a model that works, test things within in the Medicare Shared Savings Program. Don't necessarily create these competing infrastructures. And what's also equally hard is you go into one of these competing programs like NextGen or others, you invest incredibly in claims administration and everything else, and then the program's gone. And then you're back to fee for service, right? And so it really is, I think the Biden administration might be taking a little more cautious approach.
So you think we might see fewer of these value-based models. I lost track of how many there were, but it just seemed to be a garden of them.
So many. Well, here's the problem, right? Is that if Medicare Shared Savings Program is pretty simple to understand, right? But some of these others, they will either, like CPC Plus is a great example, will pay you a bunch of money to do care management. And guess what? They paid them so much money, Medicare didn't make any money, so that program's gone. And so there's this balance of if they give them extra money, then they want all this extra work. And, you know, and if they want that extra work, they're going to have to give them more money. And then there's no money for Medicare. And so none of these models have succeeded. Right. I mean, right. And that's sort of the problem. And so I don't know if it's going to get any better. I don't, you know, I mean, we've been at this for 10 years now. Right.
Right.
10 years. I mean, think about that. God, did that go by in a minute? And in that 10 years, yeah, we haven't seen the only model that I've seen that really worked was the ACO investment model for rural communities, where we saved Medicare hundreds of millions of dollars. They made a total profit on it, but it was a loan program. They just loaned out a little money and they got it all back, you know, so.
Right, right, right. So do you think though that, and I don't know whether you're taking on a downside risk at Caravan, Do you think that there needs to be more downside risk in general, that more skin in the game or something to make maybe the Medicare Shared Savings Program more effective in terms of bringing about value-based care. Does there need to be more stick?
I don't, you know, it's funny because we don't have one health system in this country. You know, we really have two. We have a public and a private system. I think for the public system, the people, the providers I work with, it doesn't matter. They work as hard as they can to serve their patients and they never make money. You know, I mean, it was very hard for them. I mean, we ended up taking on almost all of their risk because it was the only way to keep them in the program. They would have all left, mm-hmm. right? So that risk is driving good providers out. But then there's this other side of the healthcare system that really is about fee for service, right? And for those people, maybe that's what you need, but it's certainly not one size fits all.
So how come we don't hear more about commercial payers and ACOs? Is this just a question that there isn't sort of the reporting and it's not public, so you don't have the performance years and the information on a CMS website that anybody can look at? Or is it that those sorts of contracts are not taking place and this is still mainly a CMS game?
It's really interesting because most of our providers are participating with other payers, but not in a really organized way. And, you know, the problem is when you look at you know, I mean, in Medicare, there's clear, you've got high spend and chronic disease and lots of ways to improve, right? And so it's clear. Medicare Advantage, no brainer. Everybody, you know, very easy to get those models successful because it follow the same model as the MSSP. You start getting into commercial and there's a lot less opportunity, right? You got a lot more patients, less opportunity. And so the arrangements tend to be tied to the payment arrangements. So it's an add-on the rate setting argument, right? And so it's not public because nothing about rate setting is public. Right?
Yeah, right.
So, and they tend to be a little, you know, mostly very, very kind of like, well, if you, you know, if you're a good citizen, we'll give you a little extra money.
Right, right. So it's not a full expression of an ACO or value-based care. So yeah. I wanted to pivot slightly to a different subject. Doug told me that you have some particular insights into 340B and ACOs. Yeah. Brave you to take on both of those in the same sentence. So I'd be interested in your thoughts on, I haven't really connected those two. So
I don't think anyone ever did. And this is because we're the only ones that work in value-based programs in the safety net. So when COVID hit, our clients were, you know, particularly before the first bailouts happened, they were panicked. And right. they came to us and we said, what can we do? And they said, well, you know, we've got this 340B program, but there's no transparency. We don't know how we're doing. Can you look at your data and give us a sense of how we're doing? And so we went in and looked at, and we have, you know, obviously all the Part D data on our clients and the encounter data. So we could put together a picture and tell each client, what percentage of 340B discounts are you capturing on your ACO patients? And the answer was really depressing. It was about 15%.
Hmm.
And it's like, are you getting all your mail? I don't know. You know, I think so. My mailbox is full every day and they're thrilled with what they're getting, but what they're not getting is much bigger. And again, there's no transparency. So we were the first ones to be able to see that in data. Right. And tie it all together with our clients. So that's been really exciting for us because this is the first time we've ever had the opportunity to find a payment model for them to chase down referrals. Right. And so the what they're missing are all the prescriptions written by other providers on their patients, which we know about. Right. But isn't that a shame that they don't know about them? Right. I mean, wouldn't you want to do medication reconciliation on those drugs? And these are dangerous. I mean, looking at brand drugs in Medicare, the average prescription is $2,700.
Yeah. Right.
A fill. Right. And so, three fills. So 20, so it's $900 a fill. And so you're looking at that going, gosh, and you don't even know they're on these drugs. So we're able to tie all of our clients use nurses to manage their population. And so we're able to get that information to those nurses. And so now they're like, oh my gosh, Johnny's got a new problem, you know, so they're managing the care, they're managing the drugs, they're managing the referrals, and then they can get paid 340B. So on a $2,700 prescription, their average net discount is like $400 or $500.
So this has been a windfall for them.
It is. 340B is a windfall for them. It's keeping them alive. You know, I wouldn't call it a windfall. I'd say it's keeping them alive. It's doing exactly what the program was designed to do, which is to help them survive in today's environment. And being able to tie that to better patient care is really exciting for us.
So what do you say to all the critics of 340B and that it's become an abused program?
I don't see it. I think they're full of it. I'm sure there's somebody out there that's abusing it. I've got 190 clients that are on it, right? And I'm sitting there working with them every day, and they're not abusing it at all. So I think that that's just pharma talk, because they don't want to give up the money.
Right.
Yeah, but if they knew that they were only giving up like 15%, they might be a little quieter about it. But my job is to get that to 80. So we'll see. I'm sure I'll be on somebody's hit list next week as soon as this comes out.
Now, you mentioned direct contracting. I think there's 53 entities, 50. Mm-hmm. We now have a new acronym to use, DCEs.
Right.
But there was some objection to CMS sort of cutting it off. And I think there were some entities that wanted to become direct contracting entities, but CMS said, no, that's it. That's my understanding anyway. Mm-hmm. So do you work with direct contracting, or are you sort of sticking in the ACO lane? And what do you think of the direct contracting model and these new entities?
Again, you know, I think Aledade did a good job of writing a white paper on this on their website, but you know, it's for people that don't have providers. Right. So what does that mean? You know, what kind of entities are we trying to really create, you know, that aren't patient care entities, right? I don't really understand that whole idea. I mean, there's some of these obviously are provider organizations, but you know, if you look at, for example, the MSSP enhanced model, right? I mean, you can get 75%. So why would you go to, you know, this other thing that is very uncertain, right? It may not continue. You can reorganize yourself around it, but if Medicare doesn't make money, it's going away. And the other thing to think about these models is, like, you know, everybody's talking about, oh gosh, that, you know, next gen made Medicare so much money. It was only the people that didn't leave, right? So these are voluntary models. So everybody in next gen that lost money, like Sharp, a great organization, they had to get out. Right? Because they weren't going to write tens of millions of dollars in checks to Medicare. So at the end, the only people that are left are the ones that probably got lucky on benchmark bingo and really know how to code, right? And so when you really do the difference in the difference studies and you really look at this, I mean, is any of that sustainable? I'm not sure.
So do you see the direct contracting model then as just an opportunity for private equity firms and entities like that to sort of game the system?
Well, I think it gives them a chance to certainly cherry pick patients, right? Particularly with a high needs patients, right? And those are the patients where all the opportunity, you know, we grind our way out with, you know, our healthy and moderately healthy patients and do tons of work without no return, right? And you do the same work with the very sick patients and you get a return, but that pays for everything. So you start carving these patients out, and then there's not going to be any money left for the providers to get paid on taking care of their community. So I don't really know.
Just to pick at this, just one last question. So do you see it as the direct contracting model in the DCEs as basically undercutting ACOs? Is it going to make it harder for ACOs like the, you know, like Caravan to be successful?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the problem, right? And so it's sort of the same with the oncology model and, you know, the SRD model. So, you know, you just start picking out the high-risk patients, which is attractive to a payer. I mean, I get it from a payer's perspective, but from Medicare's perspective, which is, you know, we're talking about an all-in model. I think you also have to think about the providers and making sure that there's enough incentive for them to participate in these models and do the work.
So just the last couple of questions. What two or three things do you see happening with the MSSP that are going to affect Caravan? I mean, are there some changes that are being talked about or are about to happen that are going to require you to make some adjustments and sort of, halftime adjustments, so to speak?
You know, I mean, we were kind of playing the long game on this, right? And that means that you have to constantly be reinvesting in technology, tools, you know, knowledge, and constantly be moving the ball. So nothing that's happening out there really affects us because everyone knows what needs to be done, right? It is not a mystery, right? The question is, are you doing it? Are you doing it right? How do you know you're doing it? And is everybody doing it, right? And so we continue to just, you know, focus on managing chronic disease, promoting prevention and wellness, making sure we're managing medications, you know, doing everything possible to give our patients their best life and helping them manage their own disease. And every time you turn a patient and they become a better at taking care of themselves, you can monetize that for life. So we're just going to keep going down that path, and they can change the models all they want, and it's always going to work as long as you have scale.
So are you telling me that virtue is its own reward here?
Actually, in this one case, and no other case I can think of in my life, actually, it probably is.
Well, why don't we leave it at there? I'd like to check in with you maybe on a regular basis, and we'll sort of take the temperature, as they say, of what's happening with ACOs and the, all this, these competing models that, we try to write about and keep up with, but are confusing. And I guess from your perspective, maybe they're counterproductive as well. So thanks for the time. It's been really fun and engaging and a little bit enlightening. So trifecta.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning into this week's episode of Tuning Into the C-Suite Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and follow Managed Healthcare Executive on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. For more information on Managed Healthcare Executive, visit our website at www.managedhealthcareexecutive.com.